Welcome to the Vermin Apple Podcast, recordings of live poetry from Dublin.
July 2010, Derek Beaulieu.
So I don't actually see my visual poems as a score for performance, so I'm going to allow these to scroll behind me as I read from my latest collection, which is called How to Write, which was just published this spring in Vancouver, in Canada. How to Write is a collection of conceptual writing. They're all, every piece in this book you've seen before. In fact, every word, every paragraph, every sentence I've swiped, stolen, sampled, or generally just taken from other writers and try to put them into a new context. So basically what I'm treating this is a means of looking at writing the way a DJ looks at sampling. If a DJ takes a beat, isolates it, puts it into a new song, we see that as music. If an author does the same thing, we see that as theft. Now, Updike actually wrote that he doesn't read to learn, he reads to steal. And I think that is more and more indicative of how poets actually treat each other. We're not reading poetry to see, you know, what we can learn from poetry. We're reading poetry and prose to see what great ideas we missed out on, or what great ideas the author has squandered and we can steal and do better. The book starts with two epigraphs, the first from Lawrence Stern. Shall we forever make new books, as apothecaries make new mixtures by pouring only out of one vessel and into another? Are we forever to be twisting and untwisting the same rope? The second from Walter Benjamin. But when shall we actually write books like catalogues? Nothing odd can last was the dismissing criticism of Tristram Shandy upon its first publication. My piece of the same title consists entirely of study questions posed on internet websites on Tristram Shandy. Are the body passages and double entendres important in this book? Could it have been omitted? Does the author guide his pen, or does his pen guide him? Does she have redeeming qualities? Does the novel demonstrate that there can be postmodern texts before postmodernism? How do we account for the author's strikingly unsentimental treatment, at times, of such topics as love and death? How ironic is their presentation? How much control do you think the writer has over mixtures of digression and the narrator's history? How sentimental and gushy is the author of this work? If the latter is true, what justification can there be for that? In what way are such details even important for the author's method? Is it legitimate for an author to require or even request that the reader do things like imagine for yourself, replace misplaced chapters, or put up with omitted chapters? Is kind-heartedness necessarily mawkishness? Is she as stupid as she seems? Is the author in control of his digressions? Or does the story actually run away with him and have to be reined back in? Is the writer unable to present a straightforward story, or does he deliberately frustrate the reader? Is there sufficient justification for such passages in the book, or should the reader simply say, to heck with it? What does this indicate about the writer's plan and his control of what he is doing? What is the author's attitude towards science? What is the effect of the precise visual details in this book? What is the relationship between the I, who narrates the story, and the author? Which predominates? Why? Or why not? Would you argue for or against that statement? Would you rather that they were deleted from it? Agatha Christie wrote a murder mystery which is currently titled And Then There Were None. Its previous titles were Ten Little Indians, and unfortunately before that it was also referred to as Ten Little Niggers. It is a murder mystery that takes place on an isolated island, and one by one, ten murder victims pile up, echoing the nursery rhyme. My interpretation starts with a pair of quotations, the first from Gertrude Stein. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. the second from the Ramones. 1, 2, 3, 4. Chapter 1. Another 2, all sum, 7, 8, 1, 1, 5, a swarm, 5, 1, 100, 100, 100, 100. 65 every sum, sum 2, 1 or 2, 1 or 2, 30,000. A couple, some, half, 10, 15, 18, another 100, a bit, a few, several, 6, only 1, the lot, 1, 8. 2. A little group, 2, 4, 1, 5, 1, 3, 1, a lot, 3, a mere cluster, 2, 3, 1, 2, double the number, 1, a queer lot, this lot, 1, a queer one, this one, 1, 1, 1, hundreds and hundreds, 8. Another 1, 2, 8, 10, 1, 10, 1, 9, 9, 1, 8, 8, 1, 1, 7, 7, 1, 6, 6, 1, 5, 5, 1, 4, 4, 1, 4, 4, 1, 3, 3, 1, 2, 2, 1, 1, 1, 1, none. 1 or 2, all 2, every 3, 1, 5, or 2. I know the suspense is getting to you. Chapter 11. 8, 9, 25, 25, 10, 6, 7, 6 3/4. Both, half, a couple, 1, 9, 6, 6. 6, 6. Chapter 14. 4, 2, 4, 1, 4, 1, 4, 1, 2, 1, 1, 1, 6, 10, 4. 1,014, 1, 2, 3. 1/2. Half. 1, 2, 2, 1. 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3. The editor, a detective story, removes every sentence from Mary Reinhold Holt's Mary Reinhold Roberts' book, The Bat, which was written in 1920. The Bat was the inspiration for Bob Kane's creation of Batman. What I've done with this particular short story is gone through that novel, pulled out every sentence that includes the words, the editor, and arranged them simply in the order that they appear in the book. A city editor, at lunch with a colleague, pulled at his cigarette and talked. Oh, for lay off it, will ya? Said the city editor peevishly. The editor spread out his hands. The editor frowned. The editor was emphatic. The editor grinned. Grinned? No. The editor laughed grimly. The editor smiled. Grinned. His companion rose as well, but it was evident that the editor's theory had taken firm hold on his mind. The editor paused in the doorway. Well, said the editor, you won't let it go any further. Tall, reticently good-looking, and well, if inconspicuously clothed and groomed, he by no means seemed the typical detective that the editor had spoken of so scornfully. Cross it over it is a series of instructions on how to tie a necktie, or they are potentially instructions for something rather more pornographic than that. Cross it over it, bring it up through it, then back down. Pull it underneath it and to the right. Back through it and to the right again so that it is inside out. Bring it across the front from right to left. Pull it up through again, down right through and in front. Using both hands, tighten carefully and draw it up. Cross it over it, bring it around and behind it. Bring it up, pull it through. Pull it through, bring it around front. Over it from right and left again. Bring it up and through it. Bring it down through it to in front. Using both hands, tighten it carefully, and draw it up. Cross it over it, turn it back underneath it. Continue by bringing it back over in front of it again. Pull it up through and through it. Hold the front of it loosely with your index finger and bring it down through it. Remove your finger and tighten carefully by holding it and sliding it up. Start with it under it. Take it over and under it. Pull it down and tighten. Take it over to the right. Pull it up behind it. Bring it through and tighten it gently. Roy Lichtenstein was a pop artist in the 1960s and 1970s who was most renowned for taking frames out of comic books, text included, the entire frame, repainting that frame in a monumental scale, and then putting this frame, putting this new painting in avant-garde galleries throughout, throughout the world, thus bringing the lowbrow art into a highbrow situation. He now has an extremely litigious estate, which is known for finding anyone that uses the original frames that he has copied and suing them if they use that same frame for copyright infringement, saying that in fact his copy of this frame has supplanted the original. My poem, I can see the whole room, and there's nobody in it, is in fact a transcription of all of the text in all of Roy Lichtenstein's paintings in the order that they were painted, and is my effort to steal back my comic book collection. One. Look, Mickey, I've hooked a big one. Tweet. It's not an engagement ring, is it? I can see the whole room, and there's nobody in it. Am I supposed to report to Mr. Bellamy? I wonder what he's like. Knock, knock. Two. Ring! Zip, zing! I tried to reason it out. I tried to see things from Mum and Dad's viewpoint. I tried not to think of Eddie so my mind would be clear and common sense would take over, but Eddie just kept coming back. I have something for you to eat in the kitchen, dear. I'm not hungry, Mother. Please. I just want to go to my room. Forget it. Forget me. I'm fed up with your kind. Why, Brad, darling, this painting is a masterpiece. My, soon you'll have all of New York clamoring for your work. Urf! Flattened sand fleas, thong. The exhausted soldiers sleepless for 4 or 5 or 6 days at a time, always hungry for decent chow, suffering from the tropical fungus infection, kept fighting. Tucka tucka. As I started clipping a MiG's tail, this hotshot jet outfit I'm in will treat me like a vet pilot when I return from my number one winding with a report of target destroyed. Bratatat. That was their mistake, because it gave me more targets than I could shoot at. Number 4, one more to make ace. Bratata. Tex, blam, take cover, live ammo. Right now, if they're watching me, they've got to make up their minds whether I don't know they're here and will pass by, letting the outfit be sucked into a trap, or whether I know they're here. And I'm about to fire at them, but where did they come from? Not from the sea, we had our eyes glued to it. And we know there isn't an airfield on this island. Where did they come from? Where did they come from? Just then, blang, zing, bwee, ha-ha. Oh, I'll think about it. Chapter 6. Wham! Knock, knock. Pop. If You Have It is the direct transcription of a aftershave commercial. If you have it, you don't need it. If you need it, you don't have it. If you have it, you need more of it. If you have more of it, you certainly don't need less of it. You need it to get it, and you certainly need more of it to get more of it. But if you don't already have any of it to begin with, you can't get any of it to get started, which means you really have no idea how to get it in the first place, do you? You can share it, sure. You can even stockpile it if you'd like, but you can't fake it. Wanting it, needing it, wishing for it. The point is, if you've never had any of it, ever, people just seem to know. We are no longer the largest producers of language on the planet. The most common language is not English, it's not Cantonese, it's not Mandarin. Our computers produce more text per day than the rest of us combined. This particular poem was written from an anonymous computer to mine, and I just intercepted it along the way. I assume it's a love poem in some way, in some sort of obscure dialect that I'm not aware of. A chainsaw. A chainsaw is wisely resplendent. Any cab driver can write a love letter to the paycheck around the inferiority complex, but it takes a real warranty to seek some chainsaw. Indeed, the gentle tomato barely assimilates a blood clot from the stove flame. Furthermore, the sheriff gets stinking drunk, and a corporation behind the warranty goes deep-sea fishing with an orbiting power drill. Now and then, the satellite recognizes the microscope. The eponymous chapter, the chapter of the book that gives the book its title, How to Write, was a piece whereby I went through 40 completely disparate texts, from potboilers through to Tarzan adventures, through to classics of English and American literature, through to murder mysteries, poems, nonfiction, and pulled out only the sentences that included the word write, W-R-I-T-E, or writes, W-R-I-T-E-S. I then arranged them by book, in the order that they appeared in the original text. Which suddenly, Frankenstein, for instance, is no longer about that moral dilemma of the creation of life. It's a series of statements back and forth from a pair of struggling writers imploring each other to please continue writing. Don't forget to write me. So I'll finish up this set with a brief excerpt from How to Write. Lewis writes, Susan writes, Neville writes, Jenny writes, even Bernard has now begun to write, but I cannot write. We shall write out our exercises in ink here. We are all phrases in Bernard's story, things he writes down in his notebook under A or under B. I can write the letter straight off, which I have begun ever so many times. I will write a quick, running, small hand, exaggerating the downstroke of the Y and crossing the T, thus, with a dash. No, I will write the letter tomorrow, directly after breakfast. What did I write last night, if it was not good poetry? Then he stretches his hand out for his copybook, a neat volume bound in mottled paper, and writes feverishly long lines of poetry in the manner of whomever he admires most at the moment. When Lewis is alone, he sees with astonishing intensity, and will write some words that may outlast us all. This is poetry if we do not write it. But yes, I can also write poetry. And write, it is very good that you are able to read and write, well, very good. And would you write something for me on this piece of paper? It is excellent how you are able to write. Like all men of the library, I have traveled in my youth. I have wandered in search of a book. Perhaps the catalogue of catalogues. Now that my eyes can barely decipher what I write, I am preparing to die just a few leagues from the hexagon in which I was born. When one writes a novel about grown people, he knows exactly where to stop. That is, with a marriage. But when he writes of juveniles, he must stop when best he can. That is exactly what the dreamer can do, and no one else but he, and Mr. Stephen is himself a dreamer when he writes and feels like this. It recedes with the years, and I write out my lifelong hand, a letter to the me that I'll be when it's restored to a clone somewhere, somewhen. Owing to their historical position, it became the vocation of the aristocracies of France and England to write pamphlets against modern bourgeois society. Yes, but if you shout in my ear like that once more, you'll have to write things out for me from now on. Nevertheless, that pencil must scrawl broadly over the sky and a long time, merely hoping to write on its target. Perhaps you can write to me. You will write, at any rate. Have you been reading the stuff you write? I can't write that. I did not write that message, he stated. Never mind, I'll write it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Vermin Apple podcast. Viet Vern would like to thank all those involved in its production, especially, obviously, the poets, but also our kind hosts and the audience too. Our website, verminapfel.com, that's WURMIMAPFEL.com, has more information about the poets, additional podcast episodes, and forthcoming Verm events. Go look!